The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
Welcome to the latest episode of Travel with Hawkeye. Today, I am very excited to bring to you a travel blogger that I've been following for a while, and I actually kind of became aware of them when they were on The Bachelor. It was a few seasons ago. But her name is Leslie Murphy, and she started a travel blog, and I remember her from there. My wife and I watch The Bachelor sometimes, and so I started following her on her blog and her Instagram and Twitter, and she's been traveling the world. And one of the great things about her blog is people always ask me, you know, I'd love to be a travel blogger. How do you get to be a full-time travel blogger? Well, actually, she addresses that on her blog, The World Less Traveled, L-E-S, short for Leslie, The World Less Traveled. We'll talk to her about how to become a travel blogger, where she's been traveling to, some of her adventures. And also, you know what? It's not all fun and games when you're a travel blogger, too. I mean, it's a lot more than people think, and we'll talk about that and also how she was able to parlay, or if she was able to parlay, her experience in The Bachelor to being a travel blogger. And also we'll talk a little bit about that TV show also. But first, I kind of wanted to touch on something. If you listen to this show, you know that I love towers like the Space Needle, the Eiffel Tower, Empire State Building. If there's a place you can go up high, I love those. I also love to swim. Always looking for great places to swim as I'm trying to write a book called 1001 Places to Swim. And I really love waterfalls. I love waterfalls. And I remember as a kid, when I was in the Boy Scouts, I had the pleasure of being in scouting when I lived in Hawaii. And that is the best place in the world to be a scout because you can just explore. The city of Honolulu backs right up to mountains. I mean, we literally would leave our scout hut and we would walk out the front door and we would walk into the mountains, into trails in the mountains. And you could find all sorts of things. Just you'd find waterfalls that weren't on maps that emptied out into a pool. And they're all over Hawaii. It's just paradise. And if you ever are in Hawaii, and you're in Waikiki, Honolulu, and it's a rainy day, and you think, oh, my day is ruined. It is not. That's the best day ever, because what I want you to do is rent a car that day and then drive up one of the highways that cuts through the middle of the Hawaiian Islands, the Leaky Leaky Highway, the Pali Highway, and H3, because what happens is the waterfalls just start to form. And you just drive down this highway, which goes right through, as I said, the center of the island, through the mountains. And what was not waterfalls a day ago or an hour ago or 15 minutes ago suddenly becomes waterfall after waterfall after waterfall. It's one of the most spectacular sights ever. So as I said, if you're ever in Hawaii, you get caught in the rain, it's a chance to see some great waterfalls. Now, I live in Texas. I live in Dallas. I lived in Fort Worth for 20 years also. And not really known for waterfalls around here. But there are some waterfalls if you know where to find them. And I wanted to kind of touch on a couple of those because there's kind of stories behind the waterfalls of Central Texas. There's really only two that I know of. One is known as Airfield Falls in Fort Worth. And it's sometimes known as the Lost Waterfall of Fort Worth because the city didn't even know that there was a waterfall for years and years, decades. You're probably wondering, how could that be? Well, Fort Worth had an Air Force base for many years called Carswell Field. And in the 90s, Carswell Field was decommissioned and became a reserve base. And a lot of the land that they had on the Air Force base was turned over to the city. So there was a portion of the land that a branch of the Trinity River was on was turned back over to the city. And someone from the Water District was surveying the land, walked back there, had never been back there. The Air Force didn't really use that land, so they didn't really know too much about it. And they found this beautiful waterfall on the farmer's branch of the Trinity River. And they said to themselves, we got to make an attraction out of this. This is unbelievable that this waterfall's been here for decades. We didn't even know about it. So to their credit, they actually created a park and a trail, named it Airfield Falls. And now you can visit this waterfall that the city of Fort Worth didn't even know existed for many, many years. And it's I'm going to post it on our travelwithhawkeye.net blog so you can kind of see the story and the beauty of this waterfall. It's really neat, but truly the city didn't know it was there. And when they were handed over that piece of land, what a tremendous gift. Now, that's one city that got a gift of a waterfall in an odd way. There's another one up the road called Wichita Falls. And believe me, I'm not advocating you take a vacation in Wichita Falls, but if ever you're traveling, you know, down 287, Highway 287, US 287, you pass through Wichita Falls, if you're going eastbound, you will see the falls of Wichita Falls. If you're going westbound, you kind of have to turn back and look. You can't really see it from the westbound lanes. But you would assume a town called Wichita Falls would have waterfalls. But that was not the case. It was had waterfalls in the 1800s when it was named Wichita Falls, but there was a flood back in the 1800s, and it washed away the falls. So even though the town was named Wichita Falls, it had no waterfalls. Well, you can imagine if you're a city father, you get tired of hearing people ask, where are the waterfalls? Because you're called Wichita Falls. You assume you got to have some waterfalls. So in the mid-80s, being just tired of having to have to answer that question that there are no waterfalls, they decided to build waterfalls. And they actually had the Disney Corporation design their waterfalls in a park. And it actually has a faucet at the top. You can't see it. It's in a shed. But they can literally turn off the waterfalls. And I've actually driven by sometime when the waterfalls are turned off. It's in a city park there, so they can do some maintenance. In fact, right now, from what I understand, they're doing maintenance on a bridge that goes over the waterfalls, so they are temporarily shut off as I record this. But I feel that I had a little bit of something to do with the building of the waterfalls in Wichita Falls, because in 1986, I was working as a comedian and getting my start in radio, and I got hired by the city of Wichita Falls, or whoever was putting on this event, an event called Falls Fest, as they were raising money to build the waterfalls. So they asked if I would be a stand-up comedy act for Falls Fest. And here was the caveat, too. Not only was I getting paid, but I would be opening for Stevie Ray Vaughan. Like, well, why would you turn that down? So, of course, I jumped at that opportunity. So they flew me out to Wichita Falls, and I was supposed to perform on Friday at the festival and then Saturday in front of Stevie Ray Vaughan. Well, Friday, the festival, this was the first time, bless their hearts, this is the first time they ever had any type of event like this in Wichita Falls. And the event on Friday went from noon to 5. Well, nobody is going to go to a festival in the middle of the summer in Wichita Falls from noon to 5. I mean, people are working. At 4 o'clock, I was supposed to go on, and they literally put me on a stage, and there was nobody. I mean, it was an empty field. And the person that was on before me was a guy who was singing with cassettes. He had cassette tapes, and he would sing a song, then pop out the cassette tape, put another one in. This is the high-level entertainment that they could afford after they spent pretty much all their money on Stevie Ray Vaughan, who gave them a deal, by the way. So anyway, they said, you're next. And I go, there's nobody here. They said, well, why don't you just go on stage and start doing your act and possibly people will show up. So I got on the stage. There's literally nobody in this natural amphitheater, except at the very back, there's food booths and there's a dunking booth. And there's someone in the dunking booth heckling me on the other side of the field. You suck. You are horrible. You can't even draw anybody. So the first night didn't go so well, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, you know what? Saturday night, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I'm going to get a chance to open for Stevie Ray Vaughan, which would have been the highlight of my comedic career. And I said would have been because they did not realize how popular Stevie Ray Vaughan was at the time and that people would be driving from Dallas to come up to see him because they were charging $4. It was $4. I told you they gave him a deal. So people came from all over. Well, the crowd was so much larger than that park could handle. So the day of Stevie Ray Vaughan, they said to me, they said, hey, we got some good news and some bad news. Good news is you're going to get paid. We're going to pay you for opening for Stevie Ray Vaughan. The bad news is we're going to need you to work security instead of doing your act. So if you could just keep everybody off the fence during Stevie's set, we would really appreciate it. So I went from being the opening act for Stevie Ray Vaughan to working security, keeping people off the chicken wire fence that separated the throngs of people that were there to keep them from getting on stage. But I feel like in a small part I had something to do with the falls of Wichita Falls. So next time you are passing through on US 287, going eastbound, and you see the Wichita Falls, be forewarned, those are man-made falls, And your host here, your humble host here, had something to do with that. All right. We got Leslie Murphy standing by here. Travel blogger, former contestant on the television show The Bachelor. And Les, I guess my first question to you is, where in the world is Leslie Murphy today?
Right now, I am in the exciting state of Arkansas. I just flew in to visit family late last night, and I just got back from a trip to Charleston, South Carolina, which is rated the number one city in the world by Travel and Leisure, which I didn't really realize until I got there, and all, you know, everybody's saying it, and everybody's super excited about that city. So it was a good week. It's a really awesome city. I ate my way through it. I mean, that's what it's kind of known for, like all its Southern cuisine. And, oh, it's just amazingly beautiful. Everywhere you look, it's like eye candy. It's amazing. I love that city.
You know, my wife and I went there for the first time. I think it was either last summer or the summer before. I can't remember, but I was like shocked how beautiful that town was. Like, who gets to live like this?
Right? I mean, and everybody's so nice and friendly. It is like Pleasantville, just wrapped up in a city. It's amazing.
And I remember when I crossed the bridge into Charleston, and there was the marina there and all the water, and then you see the houses on the South Broad, and it just, I was like, this place, I put it right up there with Santa Barbara as like towns that just look like they were designed by an angel.
Yeah, I know. It's literally eye candy wherever you look. And I was even in the airport yesterday flying out, and I overheard this person talking about how it's like a safer, cleaner New Orleans in a way. And I kind of thought that was pretty accurate. I mean, I love New Orleans, but they do have similar feels and architecture and food and vibes. So, yeah, I mean, it's super safe, super friendly, really clean and beautiful. So highly, highly recommend that one in the U.S.
And one of my favorite authors, Pat Conroy, wrote a bunch of books and they were all set in Charleston. So I kind of had the vibe of the city and there's a bit of an aristocracy there with people who've lived there for years in those mansions South Abroad. And it was kind of neat to kind of learn about that before I went. And so it was just a neat trip there, and I really enjoyed it myself. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, first of all, let me kind of set the stage a little bit about how I know you. And I only know you from afar because I first became aware of you on The Bachelor. You were on the season with Sean, and you went pretty far in the show. And you also have a Guinness Book of World Records. We don't need to mention what it is, but you do own one.
You don't want to go there?
Oh, you can if you want. I don't want to embarrass you, but you can if you want.
No. I know. Please, please. I mean, I was broadcasting live to millions of people, so I'm fine talking about it. But yes, I do. No, you know what? Actually, I did hold the world record for world's longest on-screen kiss. But since then, the Australian Bachelor franchise set out to break our record, and they did. So I am no longer a world record holder.
Oh, that is so unfair. That is not fair.
I know. I was not pleased by it, but I pass along the torch to whoever holds the title now. So
so would you say your time on that show, did you enjoy your time on that show? My daughter wants to be on that show, and I'm like, I don't want you to go on that show.
Yeah, I know. I get what you mean, but I thoroughly enjoyed my time on it. I mean, I don't think everybody can say that. It's based on your experience, and it's so exhausting emotionally and physically, because I mean, you are up, sun up to way past sundown, mic'd all the time. So you constantly have to be aware of what's going to come out of your mouth and how it could be edited and misconstrued. And so it's really exhausting, but I came away with a ton of great friends, which I didn't really, I mean, you're in a house of 25 women competing for this guy's heart. So you don't really think about that kind of stuff, but you spend more time with the girls than you ever do with him. So it's only natural that you would make friends along the way. And I made friends, just so happened to make best friends with the winner of my season, Catherine Giudicillo. And I was actually a bridesmaid in their wedding, which was a little bit awkward, but it all worked out in the end. And I really had a great experience, but I know where we're coming from. My dad had never watched a show before I went on, but I had a lot of support from family and friends, and it turned out to be a really good experience. You just have to have a good head on your shoulders.
Did you at one point when you were sent away? Because I'm going to be honest, you were one of my favorites on that show, and like the last date that you had was like they edited it so short. It was like 2 minutes of your last date, and then you were gone. And I thought, okay, that was kind of weird because I never really got to see how you played out. But I guess my question is, by the time that you got sent home, were you emotionally ready to go home, or you're like, hey, what's going on here? I thought we had connected.
Oh, yeah. No, I was definitely not emotionally ready to go home. In fact, during that last rose ceremony in St. Croix, I never thought for a second that I would be the one going home. I was shocked when he did not call my name, like everybody else is, you know, when the bachelor doesn't call your name and the tears come and everything. But yeah, they edited that date to be a little awkward. But also looking back, it was a little awkward. It was different from all of our previous dates, which were super carefree and we had so much to talk about. And I will always go back to what wasn't shown on camera during that date in St. Croix was we were talking in this beautiful setting. It was like the secret garden, a lot of sugar mill ruins around. It was beautiful. And out of nowhere, it was like a movie, a swarm of bees came. And the producers, Sean, me, we all had to take cover in the cars. And I would just remember thinking in that moment, this is not a good omen. Like, this is not going to end well. And it didn't end well. I mean, looking back at it, it's fine. But, you know, it was a bad date. So we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, then I saw that. I don't remember how I kind of found you as a travel blogger. And you're on Instagram. You're on Snapchat. You're on Twitter. And I found you somehow. And started following you because we had a kind of mutual interest in travel. As I said, you were my favorite contestant, too. So I was like, well, sure, I'm going to follow her.
Thanks.
So would you, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm trying to connect the dots here. Did you get like a massive following from being on the show and you were able to parlay that into being a full-time travel blogger?
A little bit. You know, I definitely did receive a following from the show. And that was, you know, that aired January to about April of 2013. And then in September, I moved to Argentina to work for a hospitality company there. And then it was that next year living in Argentina that I started the travel blog. So there was a big gap, you know, between The Bachelor and then, you know, me going full-time travel. And I kind of had to parlay those reality TV savvy mm-hmm. people to a travel savvy audience.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really apples to apples, and I really had to educate people on travel and that this is my brand. And so that was a bit challenging, but it definitely aided in and promoting different places around the world and getting people interested in the new brand. I will say that.
And now you do this full time as your job. You travel blog and have people follow you on social media. And one of the cool things that I really liked about your blog is a lot of people are fascinated by people who do what you do. And you actually in your blog have like steps on how to create a travel blog and how to make it a full time career. And it's not easy. But I mean, you help people who want to do it. And I thought that was pretty cool because I've talked to other people who are like, hey, that's tricks of the trades. I won't tell you anything. Like, and I thought that was really neat that you had done that in your blog.
Oh, thanks. I mean, people always ask, how do I do what you do? And so I want to try and be able to tell them as best I can. But everybody's path is different. Now, there is a lot of competition in this industry, but my thinking is, there's enough bandwidth for everybody in the world to have a blog if they want it.
Mm-hmm.
And just because I was on The Bachelor and gained a little bit of a following from that doesn't mean that you know, somebody else couldn't do this. I mean, I have tons of blogger friends who have started from scratch and are doing amazing and are doing this full time. So anybody can do this. And hey, I'm here to help if I can. And I think it just takes a lot of dedication and a lot of creativity.
And it's not easy. It's, you know, people think like you're going to start the blog and you're going to get called. Hey, by the way, can you come to Rome for the week and write about it? It's not like that at all.
No. And that's, I know. And I look at a lot of my pictures and think, oh, she just travels to, you know, pretty places around the world, which is definitely true. But they don't take into account the travel aspect of it all, actually getting there. But it goes way before that. I mean, it goes, you know, trying to find these sponsors and these partners, and it's a lot of relationship management, and people don't see the work behind the scenes, I guess. They only see the pretty pictures, which is fine. I mean, the goal is to inspire people to get out there and not let the grass grow under their feet and to travel more. And, you know, so that's the end goal. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard work. It's full time. I mean, I woke up at 6 a.m. this morning and started working. And but the joy of it is I can work from my bed and in my pajamas. And so that's pretty cool. But I work weekends and long nights, and it's just like any other job. You have to put a lot of hours into it.
And the other thing, too, and I discovered this when I started doing this a number of years ago, is, and this is the one thing, is like I kind of feel I love to travel, and I love the experience of it and everything. But sometimes I feel like I never get to go on vacation because I go to this place I've always wanted to go, and you're working there the whole time. You've got to document your trip. You're always sending out photos, or you're writing about it and stuff. And so I always, when I do that, I always make sure I carve out time for myself to not document what I'm doing, save some memories for myself, and just enjoy the experience. And a lot of people don't realize that at all either.
You said it best. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for a little over, I guess, have had the blog for 3 years, but I've been traveling full time for a little over four. And I've noticed along the way that it's really hard to live in the present because I'm always writing about the past or planning for the future. And so I noticed that was taking a toll on those trips and how it began to always feel like work. But then I learned how to take a step back from that situation and kind of, you know, I took some time for myself and made it a little bit more personable. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I think people are like, doesn't it feel like work though in the end? And I mean, yes and no. So you got to find a way to enjoy it all.
So I want to once again give out your blog. It's The Road Less Traveled, L-E-S, theroadlesstraveled.com. And then you can click on, you know, all the destinations, travel tips, but also blogging. So if you're interested in travel blogging, Leslie gives some great tips on how to get started. And it's a lot of hard work. So, I mean, you really got to love to travel. And and I want to use it to kind of talk about some of your travels and what you kind of want to do in the future. But one of the first things I got to ask is, and I follow you on Instagram stories. And do you still have Snapchat, or have you moved over to Instagram more often? Because I've kind of given up on Snapchat since Instagram stories started.
I'm kind of with you, and I feel bad for Snapchat because Instagram just came around and just took their product as their own, I feel like.
Yes.
And I tried to do both for so long, but it turned out to be super redundant. And so I just use Instagram stories more and try and give some love to my Snapchatters, but I just use Instagram stories for the majority of the time.
Well, when my daughter told me, and she's my barometer on all things social media, when I asked her, I go, are you using Snapchat that much anymore? She goes, if I want to contact someone personally, and that's the only way I can, I do it. But for most part, I'm using Instagram stories. Then I just switched over to. So,
yeah, she's a smart girl. It's interesting to see the differences in platforms because my followers on Snapchat are really, really vocal. I'll put something up and I'll get tons of responses from people because it's so much easier to have a conversation back and forth on that platform rather than Instagram stories. You have to kind of either be following them or DM them. And I don't always get to see those direct messages because I get so many. So it's hard to actually have a conversation there, but I still use it.
Okay. So anyway, if I was following you on Instagram stories and that way is a great way to also follow your travels. And this was it was well over a year ago. You were on a camping trip, which looked like you were in a plastic bubble on the side of a mountain. You know what I'm talking about?
Of course I do. Yeah, that was one of my favorite trips to date.
Okay, tell people, first of all, what that was and where that was, and then I have a question to follow up.
Okay. Well, I've never had somebody explain it as a plastic bubble, but I love it. I love that description. It's this transparent capsule on the side of the mountain, and it's by a company called Sky Lodge Adventure Suites. And there are three pods, and it's right outside of Cusco in Peru in the Sacred Valley on your way to Machu Picchu, actually. So you can actually see these. If you look up while you're on the way to Machu Picchu, you can see these pods on the side of the road. But anyway, the only way to get to them is to climb up this mountain. And there are, you know, you're strapped in with a carrier, but you're literally climbing these rungs that are set into this mountain. And we we did it when it was raining and it was super windy. So we did it in this horrible weather, but still so amazing and worth it. And you arrive and you have nowhere to go but literally into this pod in the side of the mountain. And you arrive and it's like this, it's kind of like this luxury experience at the same time, because you have a guide and he has this like amazing 3-course dinner that he serves you inside your pod. And it was incredible food, one of the best meals I had in Peru, weirdly enough. And you know, the sun comes up at 5 something in the morning, so that's your wake-up call. And it's like Christmas morning when you do, because there are clouds that are moving right above your head, and you're in the Sacred Valley, and it's just the most magical moment ever. And the only way to get down is to zip line. So it's the coolest adventure.
So on top of that,
really is the coolest adventure. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess the question was, were you afraid at any time during that adventure?
No, I'm pretty adventurous. Let me take that back. Let me step back for a second. I have always wanted to rock climb. I've always wanted to learn how to do it. And this was kind of the first experience I had. I mean, it wasn't rock climbing. Like I said, there are these rungs that are plastered into the side of the mountain that you kind of climb. It kind of mimics a ladder, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
I don't really get scared easily, but I remember my first steps on those rungs and feeling my legs really uneasy. And I don't know if it was the bad weather at the time, but I was a little scared in that moment. But, you know, when I got going, the adrenaline kicked in and it was super exciting.
When you're climbing those rungs, did they have you like in a harness with the, in Italy, they call it the Via Ferrata, the Iron Way, which is
yes.
like a cable that you, if you fell, you'd only fall a short distance because you're hooked into that cable. Did they have that at least?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly what they had. So you felt some sense of security, but I mean, you look down and it's a long drop. So you can't help but to get a bit freaked out.
My brother and I and some friends, we went hiking in the Italian Alps, and that the Via Ferrata, that iron cable, is all over the place.
Yes.
And I remember there was a waterfall we wanted to hike to, and we were thinking, you know, should we try it and stuff? And we'd been using that cable system the whole time there. And these Italian mm-hmm. kids came by, and they tried to get to the waterfall too, but they didn't have the harness with them. And they saw the iron cable there. And I remember we still joke about this. The guy goes, Via Ferrata!
Oh, that's pretty good.
And then they all got scared and they all left. And it's still, so my brother and I to this day, that is our go-to like fearful phrase, the Via Ferrata scream. So,
my God, what an experience. Yeah, that's
so
great.
So what is on your list next? What is on your, what is on Leslie Murphy's bucket list as a travel blogger? What do you really want to see or hoping to go to?
So many. And the more I travel, the longer that bucket list
gets.
But
doesn't it?
At the top would be South Africa
mm-hmm.
and Iceland and Antarctica. Those would probably be top three right now. People say, oh, I bet you've just been everywhere. Like, do you have anything left on your list? Oh my gosh. First of all, I've not been everywhere. And secondly, that list just keeps getting longer and longer and longer. So I will not be stopping anytime soon.
You know, we had on our podcast a few months ago, a company, it was really interesting. And I'm going to pass this on. You may want to look it up. It's called Pangea 196. Mm-hmm. And this company, what they do is if you've got a job, and they can even find you a job also, but you've got a job where you can work out of your house, every month they move you to a new city and you could work, and they have a workplace for you, and you get an apartment in the city, and it's a great way to see the world. And I look it up because it's kind of a neat.
I'm glad you said that, because people ask me all the time, what are the best jobs, you know, for kind of traveling the world and seeing more of the world? And you have your traditional, you know, au pair or teaching English and all that. But that's a great company to look into and be familiar with. So I'll definitely do that and spread the love.
Yeah, because like in 2018, in January through April, you can go for the whole mm-hmm. year or 4 months at a time. So the first 4 months they're in South America, which you're very familiar with. They're going to be in Buenos Aires.
Yes.
And then Valparaiso, Chile for February, Lima, Peru in March, and then in Colombia in April. And then they move to Europe in the spring, and then they're in Asia in the winter.
And no way. So it's Pangaea 196. I love the name, by the way.
Yeah, and that's 196 countries in the world. Yeah, so that's what.
Exactly.
And this is the amazing thing, too. So they can help you find a job. But so to do this, and they fly you from city to city. You just got to get to the first city you're going to and the last city. That's all you got to pay for your airfare.
Wow.
And it costs $2,000 a month. But I talked to people who are doing this, and they said, you know, I lived in Chicago. I can't live for $2,000 a month in Chicago. But, you know, now I'm getting an apartment in Athens in June for $2,000 a month. And so it ended up being cheaper for some people to travel the world that way and work because they had jobs or they found jobs through this company. Isn't that awesome?
That's amazing. That's amazing. Because, I mean, people always say, I want to do what you do. Like, how do you do what you do? I can't do it. I can't afford it. That's the biggest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say excuse because some people just, I don't know, some people can't and that's fine. But I think there are so many ways to get around that. And this sounds like one of them.
Yeah. I highly recommend that. I talked to the people who put this on and we had them on. Like I said, you can go back and find it on one of our other podcasts if you're listening to this one now and find out more about it. But I was just amazed by what these people are doing. And it's a great way to see the world. And like I said, couples can go also, and you get an apartment with your own room in it. You share an apartment with somebody, but it's cheaper for some people to do this than it is to live in their own city and do their job. So
that's amazing. I'm definitely going to check that out after our conversation. Thanks.
And before I let you go, we talked about your bucket list of where you want to travel to, but I'm going to ask you, is there anything specific that you want to see in the world that I've got to see this specifically, or I want to do this specifically?
I want to meet the penguins in Antarctica. I really want to dive with great whites in South Africa. I really want to go hike in Nepal. There are so many specific things I want to do, and I need to add these to my bucket list. I mean, like I said, it is ever growing, and I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I think it is too.
So, I mean, yeah, there it's. I could go on and on and on. What about you? What are the top three on your bucket list?
I've never been to Rome, and I've been to Italy a number of times, but I've never been to Rome. And we're taking my parents there for their 80th birthday this year, so I'm so excited about that. So we're pretty excited about that. And then, there's places I want to see, items I want to see. Like I want to go to this one beach. Near Puerto Vallarta, it's on a national park. It's 22 miles off the coast, but it's a hidden beach. It used to be a bombing range, and a bomb caused a crater in the middle of the island, and a beach opened up, and you could only get there by a tunnel.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that?
You're selling this. We need to talk after, because I want to do this already. Amazing.
And then I also want to, next time I go to Paris, on my bucket list if you ever saw the movie The Life of Pi, I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
And the guy's name, he was named after a swimming pool in Paris called the Piscine Molitaire. And remember, everybody was calling him the name Pissing?
Yes.
And he shortened it to Pi. But that's a real swimming pool, and it was very famous. In fact, that's where the bikini first was debuted on a fashion show at that swimming pool. And then
I think I know exactly what you're talking about. And I can picture it now.
Yeah. And it fell into disrepair in the 80s and became like a graffiti haven. And it went out of business and closed. And these graffiti artists just had a day with it. And that itself looks pretty impressive. But they reopened it and remodeled it a few years ago. And I want to go swimming there.
I love that. I love that idea. That has some history behind it, too. Very cool.
So that's kind of on my bucket list. So thank you for asking.
Yeah, no, of course. I think it's so interesting to talk to like-minded people who share an affinity for travel. And it's so interesting to hear what they want to do, which then opens my mind. And I can put it on my own bucket list because they sound amazing and super interesting. So.
Well, I want to give your addresses on Instagram so people can follow you there. So give that away if you would, please.
So my blog is www.theroadlesstravel.com, and that is that's less with one S as in Leslie.
Okay.
Got a little personalization to it. And then my Instagram is Leslie Ann Murphy, and that's LeslieAnnMurphy.
All right. And follow the adventures of Leslie on Instagram, on her Instagram stories, and she will take you around the world and you will enjoy her travels. And next time you're in Dallas, if you have time, I would love to take you to lunch. I would love that.
Yeah, that I would love that, too. We can talk all about travel. I'm frequently in and out of Dallas, so that would be really fun.
All right. We'll definitely have to do that. Check out our blog, theworldlesstraveled.com. That's L-E-S, Leslie Murphy, on our Travel with Hawkeye podcast today. That wraps it up for this episode. Remember, you can follow us also at travelwithhawkeye.net. Check out our blog. I'll have links to everything we talked about on today's podcast, including Wichita Falls and the Lost Waterfall of Fort Worth. On behalf of our entire staff here, thank you for making us part of your day. And remember, go explore the world. Your adventure awaits.